This morning we hear from Governor David Eyer. The economic forecast is still dire, but not as bad as some had thought. The cuts and furloughs may not go as deep as originally feared, but curbing the coronavirus is still tied to our recovery. The priority of our vaccine rollout is still top of mind.
I do think that the vaccination program is really moving along smoothly. We have been focused on getting as many points of distribution as we can, you know, trying to be able to deliver the vaccine to the communities. So we have more than 50 sites and entities administering vaccine right now. We've been receiving between 30 and 40,000 doses per week, and clearly we are prepared right now to deliver double that. You know, if we were able to get 70 to 80,000 doses, we would be able to schedule appointments and get that distributed to the priority people in our community right now.
Well, today is Thursday, and I know this is when your health director, Libby Char, normally gets the word as to how many we're going to get for the following week. Do you have an update?
I don't have one right now, but we did emphasize with the Biden administration during the transition that the thing that would be most helpful to the state is to get more advance notice of how much vaccine we'd be getting, and obviously increase in the amount of vaccine. And last week, they had committed that the number that we got this week would continue as a minimum or a little more for each of the next 2 weeks. So, you know, we did get about 40,000 doses this week, and we planned for 40,000 next week and the following week. And, you know, and hopefully if we get more, we definitely can administer more. And, you know, we are making progress on getting those of priority need vaccinated.
You know, I happened to catch an ad by former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who said that you were refusing to allow Kapuna, you know, younger than 75 to get the vaccine. I mean, do you think that was off base? I mean, we just don't have enough right now.
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental problem is that we don't have enough vaccines. And, you know, Catherine, just a couple things. You know, priority 1A, which I think everybody agrees with, is healthcare workers and those on the front lines, and then residents, staff, and those who really support long-term care facilities. You know, those two populations are about 68,000, so about 6% of our community. The next priority, priority 1B, where we're seeing 75 and older, and then essential workers, so, you know, those who have a responsibility interacting with the public, law enforcement, police and fire, those employees are in that 1B category. And 1B represents about 230,000 individuals. That's about 20% of our population. So just getting through priorities 1A and 1B, you know, we haven't received enough vaccines to cover all of those. And 1C, which is the 65 to 75, and those with medical conditions that would warrant a priority, that's 47% of our community. That's 460,000 individuals, adults. And we're just not getting enough vaccine. And I don't believe it's helpful to our community to, you know, to have so many asking for so little vaccine.
There are a number of people that have different ideas about how best to roll out the vaccine, how best to do the testing from county to county. When you hear the criticism about what your plan is, how do you respond?
We have been working really hard, Catherine, to do a couple things. We do want to have many points of distribution because we're committed to equity and access. You know, we want to make sure that everyone who is at risk of contracting the disease can get vaccinated if they choose to. we've been focused, obviously, the hospitals and clinics were the first and obvious people to administer vaccine, especially to healthcare professionals. We have expanded, you know, the federal contract covered the large pharmacies, CVS and Walgreens, and we've been working to include all the other pharmacies. So the neighborhood pharmacies, the smaller pharmacies, we're including by asking them to vaccinate the care homes, you know, not the large long-term care facilities, but the care homes who house many of our kupuna. That's the next level, and, you know, we do have agreements with virtually all the pharmacies here in the state. And then we've been focused on community health centers. We do know that they serve the underserved population in our communities. You know, there's community health centers all across the state who are connected with those who really don't have access. And we've engaged all of the community health centers to be certified and able to deliver vaccines. And so, as I said, you know, we have more than 50 facilities statewide who is taking appointments and administering vaccine. And we just believe that being able to deliver vaccine to those most in need will require us to engage the broad cross-section of people who can administer. You know, one other thing, we are working with the small independent pharmacists. It's really, we know there are kupuna in our community who can't get to a vaccination site, and we're working to identify those individuals and then working with the independent pharmacies to be able to make house visits and able to administer vaccines where the kupuna are, because we know that not all of them are mobile.
So essentially a rapid response team that would go and make house visits.
Yes.
House calls. Switching to testing, you know, I know tomorrow, I think, starts the Safe Travels program with Korea. You know, there were lots of high hopes with Japan, but the numbers have still been very slow in getting the visitor count up, you know, from that country. But what are your thoughts about the Korean market?
Well, you know, this we have been very focused, Catherine, in the international travel because it's such an important market to our hospitality industry. You know, we're excited, but, you know, the discovery of these new variants has led to, again, the international communities really shutting down travel again until we learn more about the new variants and we can make sure that they're not spreading. So we've been proactive. You know, we do have now testing partners in South Korea and in Japan. And as soon as we can get more people vaccinated and we can reduce the spreading of the virus in the U.S., we will be prepared to begin receiving visitors and, you know, and ensuring that they will have a safe and healthy visit here in the island.
So we should temper our expectations just because the confidence level isn't up as high as some would like.
Yes. I mean, I think that that's the biggest challenge. You know, we do have surveys from all of those areas, and there is strong demand for travel to Hawaii. I think, you know, people are aware that we've done better with managing the virus, and we don't have as high numbers of infections here. And so in many instances in both Japan, South Korea, and Canada, the travelers, if they are ready to travel, they want to travel to Hawaii.
And Governor, on the issue of our unemployment insurance, you know, we just heard the announcement about Hawaiian possibly laying off hundreds of workers. We're still on shaky ground here.
I wish it was a different economic news. We do know that, you know, the pandemic has really caused a lot of suffering, and many of our businesses, large and small, is suffering because we depend so much on travelers coming here. In the unemployment office, we are working really hard to update a very, very antiquated and difficult to use system to accommodate the new programs that the federal government is initiating to support those who are unemployed. And so, you know, we're committed to reviving our economy in a safe and effective way.
Well, how do we deal with our budget shortfall? I mean, you've played it pretty close to the chest, you know, when it comes to, you know, taxes.
A couple things. You know, the Council on Revenues did update and improve the forecast when they met in January, and that has allowed us to do a couple things. We were able to defer furloughs and labor savings at least until July 1st. So I think that was something we always wanted to do, but with the new forecast, we saw improved revenues, and that allowed us to do that. We did reduce the reductions and cuts to the public schools, so we reduced the cuts by $123 million, which we had heard in the public hearings, the big concern about layoffs that would be required in order to meet the budget targets. You know, and because of the improved revenues that are being forecasted, we were able to defer any significant tax increases that would be broad-based. You know, we are still making a proposal on a sugary sweetened beverage tax, but, you know, that's driven by, you know, the huge health costs and impact that obesity has on our communities, obesity and other diseases related to high consumption of sugar.
Okay, so that's one that you're going to be pushing then this session.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, I know you've got other appointments. Anything else you want to close with?
No, I just do want to thank all the people of Hawaii. You know, everyone has made personal sacrifices that has made a difference. We are seeing the number of cases fall, and you know, Hawaii leads the country in the fewest COVID infections and amongst the lowest mortality rates in the country. So it really is because of the sense of community that everyone has and the willingness for everyone to make personal sacrifices to benefit the broader community. So I do just want to thank everyone for making those choices.
And that was Governor David Ige, who spoke with us this morning.